and magnetic fields of a bunch of components, some to zero, but they're still in that zero, still there and still acting, and rhythmically varying. And you are creating a stress wave in space-time, and that's a gravitational wave.
That should answer the question that was put forth. Now let's go on to Tom, who's on the line. Hello, Tom.
Oh, hello. Who's this?
This is Bill.
This is Tom. I'd like to address Mr. Tom Bearden.
Okay.
Pertaining to a Japanese invention, an Ilco company, I believe, invented this so-called motor. It's similar, I think, to the one Tom described previously. May I describe it?
Yes.
It's a starter, and in this starter is ferrite magnetic poles, ferrite magnets.
Right.
Now, on top of the, on this, one of these poles is a timed electro pulse DC. Now, that's on the starter. I'm just a simple electrician, so anyway.
You're doing good. Go ahead.
Now,
you're absolutely correct.
Well, anyway, there's a single pole rotor, this being pulsed, it sends the single pole rotor, say in a clockwise rotation, it's repelled by the electromagnet, and the rotor is sent on its way, and say it's gone clockwise, it's helped by these ferrite magnets to make a complete revolution, and then it's pulsed again and throws it again. Now, has to be started by something on the externally started, and then this keeps on going. Now, the purpose of this is to conserve battery juice by this pulsing, and with the help of the ferrite magnets, you gain energy, and you save battery juice. And it's a battery motor, really, with very low consumption. Now, Ilco invented it, and I was wondering if Mr. Bearden heard of it. Any of you gentlemen heard of it?
I've not heard of it. Maybe John has.
Yes, I have.
Oh, thank God.
You have described a process which you yourself know, which could free yourself completely from oil.
From oil?
That's right. Well, if you utilize the poles in the
motor. Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, sir.
Right. You already know what the true thing is.
Yeah.
So make it.
And we happen to have one that's almost exactly what you
described. Almost identical.
Here.
Now change the situation into monopoles.
Yeah.
You see, you don't need a north and a south in a motor.
That's right.
That's put there for somebody's convenience to waste energy.
Oh, I see.
All right.
The critical thing is if you have a motor of any kind of design and the battery runs down, you know, you don't have at that point what we're talking about. If the battery stays up there and charged up and the thing keeps running, and you can get a little bit of energy out of it, any amount at all that you can throw out of the system and burn up and use up and you're free to use, then you have the kind of thing we're talking about.
Oh, I see.
Which is, by the way, Tom, is very easily done with what he's describing.
Yeah, and I think that if I understood John right, what John is saying, I cut in on this program just a little bit after it started, so I missed part of that. But if I understand him right, what he's saying is he's going to put directions on how to build this thing on that tape so everybody will know how to build it.
That's right. And you know what? This gentleman right here, right now, knows the answer.
He's just got to make it.
He's close to it. So
just build it. I don't care whether you build it on an aluminum disc, on a piece of wood, it'll do the same thing.
Who is this? Is this John talking?
Yes.
That's John Bailey, yes.
Now, John, they have a multiple rotor where it augments the horsepower, flight power of
sure.
the unit.
Sure, they're not going to put anything on the market that would contradict all the laws.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right?
Well, originally that motor came out of the Wankel Laboratories in
yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's similar to a Wankel, for God's sake.
Well, the very first one was done by E.V. Gray.
Oh, I see.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that particular motor was very efficient, although each time the physicists and the scientists went to test it, the dynamometer was always broken. Okay?
Yes. Sir.
Now E.V. Gray sits there with a motor, and it goes nowhere.
Oh, I see.
Right. Ronald Reagan gave the man an award for that patent.
No kidding.
In conservation of energy. Yes, he did.
Gee.
And that motor, to this day, is still sitting in a back shelf somewhere.
Can you imagine that? And that's our solution to the auto engine.
Well, how would our scientists feel if all of a sudden one of these motors became very practical to me and you? What would they say? What excuse would they come up with?
Oh, boy.
It's a formidable question because for a while, Hitachi was going to put that motor in the Mazda automobile.
That's right. 45 horsepower.
A little 45 horsepower motor. Now, it would gain energy going downhill. It would use a little going uphill, and you'd have to charge it about once a
week.
But
nothing compared to what an electric car would use.
That's right.
You know, there's an old saying, it would make cars cheaper. But the extension cord would cost a lot.
They just raised the price of the batteries to $2,000 each.
Yeah, I see.
But now you don't even need the extension cord. Okay, Tom.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. You're certainly on it. Now make the motor.
Okay.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind.
Good. I'm wondering what consideration has been given to the economic structure of this country. There are so many corporations involved in energy production and energy use, of course. And so many jobs dependent on them. Could there conceivably be more jobs generated? And in this transition, if it could occur, it's of such great magnitude, how can we avoid chaos?
Well, very easy. We've got chaos right now, so we're going to get rid of the chaos.
True, but can you...
Whenever you consider, Marie, that most of the dollars that you spend right now are for energy, that's chaotic. I mean, you spend more money for energy than you do for food. You spend more money for energy than for taxes or anything else. And that's chaos in your own personal life.
Well, much of it has generated the great debt we have in this country.
Oh, the debt was created out of air, so I wouldn't really worry about that. You know, we have a system over here where we let some private bankers create money out of the air and give us the great ability to pay them back with real wealth plus interest. So don't worry yourself about that. We'll get rid of that.
With inflated dollars.
Later. But as far as the economics of the country is concerned, one of the things that will right the economics of this country is for you to be able to keep the wealth that you have and spend it on real things rather than on energy. It's like somebody trying to charge you for the air you breathe. So the oil companies will have to change their marketing procedures.
How can they be involved in this?
What, the oil companies?
Yeah.
Right now we're burning oil in order to get energy, and of course we're polluting the planet.
Right.
We should be using those oil products to make fertile lands, or arid lands fertile.
Food
again.
And other products,
and
true.
There's things where there'll always be need for petroleum products. They'll have to change their marketing techniques. As far as, you know, the biggest industry, I guess, in the country is the utilities. If you can make a free energy device for your home, you can certainly make a big one for the utilities. So they won't be polluting the air as they provide electricity. The transitional changes certainly will probably be a little tough on some people as we go into this new age of energy. But we have to remember that progress goes on. There was as we've talked about on the show before, Marie, there was a great industrialist whose efforts and the output of his corporation really caused America to be. Without him and his his thing, well, no, it wasn't Ford.
No?
We wouldn't have had the West. But one day, Mr. Studebaker had to stop making wagons and start making cars. So we're going to have to, we're into that. We can't hang on to the old because there's a great economic structure built upon the old.
How can this be, though? How can we make this change?
Just put it on the market?
It doesn't happen instantaneously. It's not a step input. For example, if you produced right now, for example, suppose you had available a real cheap motor, let's say by cheap I mean something that would be $5,000.
Yeah.
That would power your home. Let's take that as a given. Let's say you could do that. $5,000 or $7,000, somewhere in there. looks like about the kind of prize that you could at least start delivering the first ones for. There are lots of people that are not going to be able to afford $7,000 cash. And it's going to take a long time to actually power a significant number of homes. But eventually, after a period of, you know, 2-3 years, whatever, a significant number of homes will be powered by these, but still a significant number of people will still be using the power company. Only now, there'll be assemblies of units in the power companies furnishing the power at maintenance cost of the system plus a fair profit. It won't be at all the kind of inflated prices we're paying for energy right now, and you won't put the power companies out of business.
Well, that's
it will certainly redirect a lot of things. transportation will get cheaper, so more people will travel. A lot of people would fly right now a lot more if they could afford to fly. People fly as little as they do because the price is too high and the seats are uncomfortable and a whole bunch of other things. But what I mean is the system adjusts, and as everybody's standard would go up is what really would happen. You wouldn't have wholesale losses of people and the standards stay the same. What really would happen is the standard of living of everybody would go on up gradually year after year as this market slowly got filled. And it would take 20 years. If you could go into production day and night with huge factories cranking it out, it'd take 20 years before you could even fill the backlog. And you wouldn't have a wholesale instantaneous change. You would have a gradual shift in what people do and what kind of markets they have, but yet not a catastrophic change.
Well, you got to remember also. You got to remember also, Marie, that they first started electrifying the United States around the turn of the century after Mr. Tesla gave us the alternating current.
True.
But by World War II, only 22% of the country was electrified, and it took World War II to get the whole country electrified.
How soon?
A long time.
How soon could a device like this be installed in my home, say?
We hope within a year.
After the date that somebody
within a year?
Enough to go ahead and do the final development of the production engineered product.
Now, would this be able to heat the water, heat the house,
everything.
Keep all the appliances running?
That's correct.
Everything and then some.
We're talking
sounds
about
like
a 15 to 20 kW unit.
Well, it sounds utopian to me because I just got my electric bill today, Marie. It was $456.
I've had to sit down before I opened some of mine.
And I used less electricity than I did a year ago. That's also on the bill.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen such a high electric bill. And I have a small house. I mean, I don't live in a big mansion.
But yeah. You
it's
leave
a standard
the
little old
that,
cracked
that
house
chair.
Out in the valley. That's $225 a month for electricity.
It's too much.
Well, it's not necessary, and so those things are going to be done. One other thing that should be brought to your attention, and we've discussed this with the League of Public Utilities, they look upon it as a boon, because as these devices start getting used in the homes, the first thing that utilities are going to see is a lessening of their demand curve, which means that they're not going to have to go out there quite as quickly or if all and go through this capital formation, which is very, very expensive to build these multi-billion dollar nuclear facilities. And that will save the stockholders a great deal of money as well as all of us. So there is really nothing but pluses and bonuses in there.
Well, what is standing in our way?
Development money?
Development money. How much would it take?
Billions.
Billions? Well, we're spending
To put the first product on the market, production engineer it with the smallest team you could get to do it, you're talking about a minimum of about $3 million. Any way you price it out, that's the smallest way you could do it. When you spend the money to do it, that's what it comes out at. A more reasonable figure, to try to figure that you don't hit everything exactly the first time you do it, that you do have some shifting around, which always occurs in research. You never have everything go perfect in research. You got to do some fiddling in research. To take a more reasonable thing into account, you need $5 to $7 million. That's what you need. And there's about four or five different inventors in the country today that, given that kind of money, could deliver or have a very high probability of delivering within 1 year a production engineered product that would power the average home.
And you're talking about the development of a prototype and not one that would be marketable.
No, I'm talking about doing the full production engineering. It can be done in a year if you really get after it. If you want to play real safe on that, give it 18 months. Give it another 6 months, and yeah, it's ready to go into production at that time. So if you want to play conservative, and that's a good thing to do with something like this, say 18 months and $7 million, and you can do it.
But to answer your question, Marie, the economy will be far better off. Because it always is better off when you've got more money in your pocket.
Have you approached any of the congressmen, the senators on this?
Yes, indeed.
And are they intelligent enough to see the good in it?
No, they're not.
I was afraid of that.
The problem, Marie, is...
They can't see the forest through the trees.
The problem we're talking about is insidious. Almost the entire Orthodox scientific community immediately fires out the idea you cannot violate conservation of energy. And you cannot violate conservation of energy as long as you don't do what we're saying, curve space-time locally. And all our university students and all our professors have been taught that you cannot engineer general relativity at all. It's not engineerable. It's unthinkable. It's heresy to even mention that. Well, you know, somebody, a scientist, is supposed to be a heretic as far as fixed ideas.
True.
And so what we need is we need the universities to not be so staid, but to be a little bit more heretical as far as maybe you can engineer general relativity because nobody's ever tried. And what we're saying is you can do it, and this is a way to do it, and you ought to try it. We're throwing down that challenge to the universities. We've told you exactly how to do it. We've told you exactly where to check to see that if you do that, you can violate all these conservation laws. Just read Misner, Wheeler, and Thorne, Gravitation, and they'll tell you you could if you could do that. Read that book to see what the assumptions are in the orthodox limited general relativity that's taught. Remove the limitations and see where you are. And do the electromagnetics like we've said. Do the experiments yourself. Don't take our word for anything. Do it yourself in your own labs and in your own universities. Then come back and tell us what results you got.
One other thing, Marie, you got to keep in mind. You were talking about Washington and the politics and the politicians. The politicians are quite well aware of the fact, in the state of California and also on the national level, that the greatest profiteer of the sale of energy is the government. And if you start taking away the revenues that they get from selling energy sources, you really start hanging the heart of a politician.
Well, that's our greatest problem, isn't it?
Sure is. But there's a way over it, and it'll
Bill,
be done.
Bill, can I interject one thing?
Yeah.
It's not to be hypocritical about the whole thing. Don't cry that you have not had the answers in front of you, and then 3 weeks later come back and say it can't be done. In other words, I am saying to all the people out there, I've heard you cry about where is the energy, and yet you turn out to be big hypocrites when it's right in front of you.
Seem to like to pay those big electric.
Well, I'm not condemning the whole nation. I am just condemning. You can squawk all you want about high-paid utility bills, but you have the choice right now to do something about it. Now, you have that choice. Do something with the choice.
I'd be delighted to do something tomorrow.
Well, write letters.
I tell you this.
Get Joe Newman his patent, and you'll crack the door wide open.
A bill has been introduced to the House of Representatives by Congressman Burton of Ohio.
Burton?
And he is, the bill is to give Joe Newman his patent. Congress can grant patents if the patent office won't. They've done it on one other occasion. The bill also calls for an investigation of the patent office, which will not give the patent to Joe Newman, even though they know that his free energy device works.
The device works. His book is on the market. Anybody who reads that book should be able to make that device or at least prove in principle to himself that this can be done.
Now, we don't know whether the fact that the commissioner of the patent office is a one-time oil executive has anything to do with it or not. That may just be a coincidence, but nevertheless, congressional investigation has been called for in Congressman Burton's bill and a congressional patent given to Joe Newman, and I hope they do.
One more point that I'd like to make, Bill. You see, if funding does not occur for this type of project, what these industrialists may find out is every garage mechanic in the world will have one, then they no longer need them. They don't have to borrow any money.
Wow.
Okay.
That would be their comeuppance,
now,
wouldn't it?
What I am basically saying is these devices are so simple that, like I've said before, you can stand in front of a forest and not see the trees.
Well, the thinking that has to go into them is awfully complicated, but the actual device itself gets far simpler than anything we normally build, which is why we can't understand it.
That's right.
Well, now, these devices could be produced now.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, that would generate a lot of jobs, too, wouldn't it?
Of course it would. Everything that ups, that decreases sunk costs, things that are just burned up and thrown away and lost, you might say the money is burned up.
That's
everything
true.
That quits burning up your money gives you more money to have yourself and raises your standard of living. And as everybody's standard goes up, it's a multiplying factor. It goes up more than just a linear amount. It goes up exponentially. And so what you would do is you would start freeing everybody economically. You really don't have freedom unless you're economically free.
No,
and most
we're
of us
truly
are not economically free.
Right. We're truly tied to the Far East, to the Middle
well,
East.
Well, it's even worse right now. For example, they're setting us up like turkeys right now.
I'm ashamed of our country.
The refinery is right now being exported back over to the countries in the Mideast. And what you're going to see the next time they tighten the screw on you for oil, we're not even going to have refineries enough to refine our own product. We're going to have to get the gasoline itself from abroad, not just the oil. So they're beginning to set us up for a real squeeze in the future. You can see it coming right down the line.
Refinery, how can we be so short-sighted?
Sure. Well, it's deliberate. Refining in this country is now a depressed industry.
And what to add insult to injury, Marie, there is six times more oil in Alaska than there is in all of the Persian Gulf.
Oil is a glut on the world market, so obviously they raise the price.
It's disgraceful.
Of course it is.
But you can change that as a person. Everybody out there listening can change this as a person. It only requires the people. The people make up this freedom. If the people do not want freedom, then the people just sit back in their chair every night after work and they fall asleep.
And pay your bill every month.
That's right.
Pay the bill.
You well, can, then this
you
requires
can,
letters.
You can start with the letters and the telephone calls to your congressmen and to your senators. One of them won't know what you're talking
See,
about. The other one might.
Bill, we really don't need their oil.
No, we don't.
We really don't need their oil. We don't need the politicians that we have running around creating havoc, telling us about these shortages when there's no shortage at all. I've done the experimentation, and I'm telling Radioland out there tonight, stop being so hypocritical about this and write your senators and congressmen, get Joe Newman his patent, and you'll see the door open up for your freedom.
We seriously need a breakthrough in this area. We need to break through this barrier, and the only way that can come is from the people. We have to, for example, get across to the average citizen that scientists, for example, are not magicians. They are human beings just like any other group, and they're a distribution of persons. There's some good ones and some bad ones, and there's a lot of pompous ones and all kinds of things, just like any other group you would pick out. Okay, don't just because something is said by a scientist doesn't necessarily make it true. So we must not raise science, for example, to the blind worship or the dogma. In other words, feel free to question a scientist. If you look at the things that scientists have pronounced, you'll find that they often change every few years. And so don't take science as being absolutely, positively having ultimate truth. Science does not produce ultimate truth. It produces a good kind of truth, but it's not ultimate. So don't deify them. They are human beings, and their knowledge is imperfect.
You know, also, Marie, you might put pressure with your letters and telephone calls to places like Caltech and UCLA, USC, and the aerospace industries around here and say, why don't you investigate this? Now, they'll probably send you a letter back if they do and say, it's impossible.
Well, what you do is you ask them a specific question. Ask
them
how many experiments they've done in this area and to please report to you the results of those experiments.
And, of course, they have done none. But they will tell you that it's impossible based upon that great data and research that they have done, which is zip.
One more point, Bill, here, that if you get the Joe Newman book on his free energy machine, you will find hundreds of letters at the back of that book where Joe Newman actually wrote the president, four presidents to be exact. They never viewed the tape. They never viewed the information. They just sent him one big excuse after another, backwards and forwards.
Well, that's disgraceful.
Well,
I could see that with this kind of device, we Americans can gain our self-respect.
That's correct.
Right.
That's exactly what you want.
And you can gain a great big portion of something you're losing every day, and that's your individual freedom.
True. Well, I thank you very much for all this information. It's been most interesting.
Good questions, Marie, and I appreciate you getting in here with us.
We're going to go right to work on it.
All right. Thank you, hon.
Thank you.
All right. David, you're on.
Yes, sir. Well, your show's been so interesting tonight, I don't know where to begin. I'm a first-time caller, and hope I don't get stage fright.
Well, don't get stage fright. We're all just country boys here.
But anyway, I'm an electrician, and I dabble in real estate, and I'm kind of a amateur person in regards to science. I went to UCLA. I got a life science degree, and I agree that it's hard to get original thoughts through in the university system. For instance, I went to the physics department because I had some notions regarding gravity, and I tried to discuss it, and I was told, well, there's not been anything seriously new come up in physics in 1926, and they didn't want to listen to me. But anyway, I do have some ideas regarding gravity and light, and I just wondered if you wanted to hear about them.
Sure.
Go right ahead, but kind of make it quick. We've spent a lot of time with some of the callers here, and I want to get to as many as I can, all right?
Okay. Anyway, I've been thinking about gravity for several years now, and I wonder, I may be a little slow, but is the theory that bodies have gravitational attraction still valid?
Not in that exact sense. What you really have as gravitational field is a warpage or a curvature of the space-time itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the position or motion of the bodies is due to, which, for example, the traction of mass is due to that curvature.
So in other words, gravity is a phenomenon of space and not necessarily intrinsic.
That's correct.
To
it's
the body.
It's a phenomenon of the curvature of space-time.
Mm-hmm. And then I had one other question regarding the speed of light that I've been thinking about for some time. Is there any thinking as to what it is that affects the speed of light? Why is it so universal in the electromagnetic transmission?
Well, it varies, you know.
It does vary?
It does vary. For example, on the surface of the Earth, the Russians are quite aware and have published in the literature that the speed of light in a hard vacuum on the surface of the Earth is a little faster than the speed of light in a hard vacuum away from the Earth. And that's due to the fact that all the charged particles in the Earth, the charge increases the potential or curves space-time a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at vacuum as nothing but a massless charge, and it says that you've got a little denser vacuum, if I can corrupt the term here. And just like sound moving faster in a denser medium, the light waves move a little bit faster. In the fourth decimal, they move that much faster on the near the surface of the Earth. And that is established experimentally.
And is gravity in some way related to the speed of light?
Well, it's certainly related to the change in the speed of light. If you curve space-time, the speed C is not necessarily the same speed it was before.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the real thing that C represents, it's a limitation on the movement of mass. Mass can approach a certain value. You know, it can approach theoretically as close as you want to get to it, but can't exceed it. That's really what it says. There are certain things that already move faster than the speed of light. For example, the De Broglie waves, which do produce real physical effects, and the man was given the Nobel Prize for discovering that, Louis de Broglie. De Broglie waves themselves always move faster than the speed of light, or the slowest they can ever go is at the speed of light, but they're always faster than the speed of light. And since they produce real effects, they can't be ignored. So there are things that move faster than the speed of light already in physics.
Yes.
So when anyone comes in and naively says you cannot exceed the speed of light, that's foolishness.
And what are your thinkings on inertia? Is it
as far as I'm concerned, inertia is an aspect of mass, and mass is nothing but a trapped scalar resonance, trapped by the spin of the particle or whatever that makes up the mass. And so you can increase the mass of an object if you increase the amplitude of that scalar resonance, and you can decrease the mass and inertia of the same object if you decrease it.
And have you ever heard the notion of gravitational shadow?
Yes, I have. That goes all the way back to Lesage. I forget the century, but it's several centuries old.
It
was refuted based on a physical model that if you had a planet moving through raindrops and they struck the front of the planet more often than the rear, the planet would decay in orbit, in other words, and so that couldn't be it.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, if you get into it in terms of quantum mechanics and you're not dealing with particles that hit and bounce off and produce momentum, a version of the Lesage model can be made to work.
And then I think perhaps one other question, there's a notion of the death spin of the...
You know what? I just noticed that our clock has stopped here in the studio. I'm thinking it's 11:25, and we're midnight. And I've got to run, and I've got to say goodnight to all of you, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right. Good night to you all. Tom, we'll check with you later.
Okay, good night.
Bye-bye. Hello there. This is...